Welcome to the Phoenix Unlimited Podcast.
What's up, everybody? Thanks for tuning in to a new episode of the Phoenix MMA podcast. This podcast is going to be about the positional hierarchy of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And really the point of this podcast is to give you a blueprint and direction and explain the system of what Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is. I know people say that word system all the time. But it's the strategy, the blueprint. It's the reason why you're doing the moves and the reason why you're trying to get positioned. So if you're new to jiu-jitsu or you've maybe wondered about this for a while, about why each position is awarded certain points, like there is a strategy, there is a direction behind it. So that's what this podcast will be about. So especially if you're looking into it, starting jiu-jitsu, or if you've recently started and you're still a little bit confused about the strategy behind it. So this one's going to be about the positional hierarchy of jiu-jitsu. I'll go over. We had tournaments and fights yesterday. This is Sunday. Hopefully everybody's having a nice, cloudy, overcast, pretty Sunday. The positional hierarchy. My goals on this podcast is to give you the blueprint for jiu-jitsu. Hopefully this will make it give you more direction, more digestible, maybe help you understand when I'm making a lesson plan, the purpose for making a lesson plan. You can definitely get too OCD or too organized, and you can stifle techniques that need to be used, but at the same time, you do need to have a system and you need to be organized. The Gracie Baja strategy for their curriculum. I don't think it's a bad idea to have a curriculum and have a system and have a plan. When I worked at the UFC gym, that's what they used as a company, was the template from the Gracie Baja curriculum. It's just limited. It's just not in depth enough. And the curriculum is extremely, extremely basic. That was my main issue with the UFC gym Gracie Baja curriculum, was that, I have no problem. I actually love organization and systems and strategy and planning, but it needs to be updated and not outdated with modern techniques. And but there's little political and little weird things with that, you know, that everything can get political and everything can get tarnished by, and I'm talking about politics, where people, not actual like global politics or United States politics, but just politics. Really, what I would consider as politics is somebody purposely ignores a technique or a strategy just because they're not good at it. And if they give any attention to it, that would show that they're ignorant in it, and it's an ego thing. And then they all pair up with other people as well that are not good in that area or that field, and they'll try to dismiss the entire technique, area, field. And again, that's how you can get like a positive feedback loop, because you're in an echo chamber and you can wake up and your program is severely outdated. So if you hear me say jiu-jitsu politics, that's more what I'm talking about. But you do need to have organization. You do need to have a strategy, a lesson plan on what you're doing. But it also has to be constantly evolving. Jiu-jitsu is constantly evolving. There's new innovations. MMA is constantly evolving. So if you're not staying up to speed with it, if you're not actively paying attention and doing constant education as an instructor or a practitioner or a competitor, you're going to get left behind. It's never going to stop. So if you're doing jiu-jitsu just for fun, you don't have to be that hardcore, but if it's your profession, then you need to be up to speed. It takes a lot of work. So the positional hierarchy, the system of jiu-jitsu, like every martial art is a system, and their systems just for what they're good for, what they're designed for. So like this will be explaining the system of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. You know, catch wrestling has a different system. Folk style wrestling has a different system. Freestyle has a different system. Judo has a different system. And lots of times in martial arts, people will think that they're silly or one is just awesome. And it's really just that there are organization of moves and strategies based on like what problem they're trying to solve. So like judo's there's a cool thing with judo. It's just like that there's a pretty quick pin, and the pin is the idea for judo, which was born of jiu-jitsu for samurai. But the idea with judo is there's limited groundwork, or you can pin somebody pretty quick if you're saying it's eye control. It's a pretty quick pin. And the idea, even also the reason why I use joint locks in judo and throws is with samurai armor, striking would basically be useless because of armor, but you could still throw someone. You could trip, you could throw someone even with armor on. And then the pin was actually so you would use your judo or your jiu-jitsu, Japanese jiu-jitsu, you would use it if your weapon malfunctions, like say your sword, you lost your sword, it broke. And then you would use your throws and your ground position and your control, your pins, until you could get to your secondary weapon, and then you could stab your opponent and kill them. Or your backup, your teammate could come and stab them. So yeah, once you understand it, it's like, okay, that's a smart system if you're thinking about samurais fighting each other. Smart system. Taekwondo, similar. The now, you know, Taekwondo is kind of it's kind of been pushed to more of like a young kid martial art activity. It builds good flexibility and stuff, but it's not a big player in the UFC. There's not any Taekwondo champions, world champions that are UFC champions or vying for titles or in the top 10. A lot of good UFC fighters have Taekwondo backgrounds. There's still good skills that come to it. But with Taekwondo, one of the origins is the big, cool, like kicks, like jumping in the air, like kicking, 10 feet in the air, 12 feet in the air, however they can for the world records and stuff. But that's for... It's for dismounting horsemen. So again, you lose your weapon or you lose your horse. And is it a Hail Mary? I think so, for sure. But it's still like you got to see like what is it developed for. So it would kind of make sense that Taekwondo is not the best at fighting in the UFC. Like you got to look at what it's specifically made for. Same thing, you look up Capoeira as a system. Capoeira, slaves in Brazil were not permitted to train in martial arts or use weaponry. So they had to disguise their martial arts training in dance. So again, it's better than nothing, and it's better to be trained in something that's like not optimal than not trained at all, but it had to be disguised so that the slave owners wouldn't, you know, come punish them. And this is pretty similar where like governments or totalitarians always, it's one of the things that they do. I believe that's how nunchucks, I think nunchucks might have came in that same way, similar, where an oppressive government wouldn't allow the people weapons or training, things like that. And so similar to Capoeira, that one, I'm not that up to speed on that story, or I can't recall it, but very similar thing where, you know, it's a way to control your population is, do they have weaponry, and can they actually train in martial arts or fighting tactics, things like that. So, but Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu had its own evolution. Today, not going to go through the deep evolution of how it went from Jiu-Jitsu to Judo to Jiu-Jitsu again, and then Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Not going to go through that history lesson. It's interesting if you ever want to. You ever want to hear it or read it, but the point today is just to really explain the positions and what the goal is in jiu-jitsu. Like if you're going to play football, you need to know how much, like how many points do you get for a touchdown, how much you get for a field goal, how much you get for, a safety, all those. You need to know the penalties and the flags and everything. What's going to happen if you face mask, grab somebody's face mask. the cool thing about jiu-jitsu is it's going to teach you combat logic. So it will, when you're stressed out or you're really tired or you're in physical discomfort or you're in pain, the nice thing about it is once you have it memorized, then you know where you need to be going. Lots of people, when they first start jiu-jitsu, they feel like it's just a wild tornado of swirling around in circles and then getting really tired, getting smushed and getting just smashed, and then eventually getting choked. And it's just like a blur. But this one should give you some direction. And it can be used in other subjects in your life. Just if you look at it, it teaches you how to logically look at combat or apply a system with logic. And then you could take that skill, and it doesn't have to be exactly the same, but you could still do it and take that skill of practicing logic and strategy, and you could apply it to other parts of your life that when you need to solve a problem. So we'll start with I believe the first John Donahoe podcast where he was on Joe Rogan's podcast where John Donahoe was a guest. He went over the system of jiu-jitsu and he just goes through it like slow and explaining each step. I'll go over that in just a second. When I heard it, and this is one of the critiques I've heard from Brazilian jiu-jitsu instructors, which this is just something that you forget, and everybody, I think this will happen to people in your career field. After you've done something for 10, 20, 30 years, there will be things that you, that are common sense to you that are not common sense to a beginner or anybody else. And when you first started, they were revolutionary and it was exciting. But just with time, eventually it's so self-evident that it reminds you of gravity. Like everybody knows gravity's there, but, his breakdown, I've seen several instructors, the critique of it was that it was so fundamental, like, duh, common sense thing. But again, you have to remember, there are more fans, or there's more practitioners, there's more Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu practitioners now than there ever has been. So there's a lot of new people that just don't know what the strategy, tactics, the explanation of why mount is given 4 points, etc. And I learned it originally just because when I first started, YouTube was around, but there was hardly anything on YouTube. You could get some grainy highlight videos that were pretty cool every once in a while, but still to see tournament footage, you'd have to buy like VHS or DVDs. I can still remember Ted Aday, him being like a legend, but there was no footage of Ted Aday on YouTube, and everybody would be like, dude, Ted Aday is the man. He's the best. Like, Ted Aday's amazing. And I remember the first time I went to Brazil, the guy that, one of the guys that I trained with in Brazil, he had like a prized possession, like a VHS tape that he like was protecting. And it was footage of Ted Aday at some just local tournament or whatever, because the footage wasn't on YouTube. You couldn't find it. Like, this guy had to pull out this VHS tape and show where somebody just recorded it with a camcorder. So, information was difficult to get. There's a lot of cool things, now because the information passes so freely and so fast. So back then, it was tough to get information, but with that, it forced you to read books. So I read a whole lot of books on jiu-jitsu because there just wasn't other media. There were podcasts didn't exist, YouTube hardly had anything, and also smartphones didn't exist. You had at that time, my phone, I think, was like with a green background and black, like, ink or whatever, readout. And the only game it had on it was like Centipede or something like that. So you actually had to read books, and all of the books, every book that I read, basically that was the very beginning, was it explained the strategy or the system of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. But again, people don't read books as much nowadays, and so without reading books, lots of people don't have that introduction. They don't have any history lesson and introduction, so they just show up to a class and they follow that lesson plan. And honestly, if you were to get on YouTube and you were to try to figure out what the strategy is, if you were to type in strategy of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, you would probably get a huge range of like really good in-depth stuff, but it might be at a black belt understanding level, or you could get some absolutely just stupid, incohesive, like terrible strategy stuff. So, and as a beginner, you wouldn't be able to sift between it, and there would be 10,000 search results. So it'd be tough to maybe tough to get this. And yeah, I don't think they make as many books now too, just because I think not as many people buy physical copy books. I don't see as many jiu-jitsu books coming out as when I first started training. But so understandable, and I'm sure this probably happens to dentists and, you know, everybody, people in every profession. There's probably common sense things. I know from working in service industry, there's tons of things that drive service industry people just mad, that normal people that never have done it, never work in that industry, yeah, they just have no idea. They're so oblivious. But so like Don Hurst, just review Don Hurst's breakdown. He does a pretty good breakdown on it. Again, yeah, he does pretty good simple breakdown. Like step one, take the opponent off their feet to the floor, take them to the floor. The purpose is you get rid of the, or you avoid the kinetic energy, the explosive energy somebody can generate when their feet are on the ground. And even somebody that's untrained, if they're just explosive and strong, they can still throw a hard punch. You don't really need any training. It's pretty human nature to throw a punch. Now, it's not a good punch, but it could still be a hard punch if the person's strong and heavy. Like, you know, if somebody's over 200 pounds and they're explosive, like, they can at least swing. They can swing their arms pretty fast, and they have enough weight that it's not smart to be hit by it. So step one, you take somebody off to the floor. So that gets rid of that. Once somebody's trying to punch up against gravity, the power is dropped significantly. They can't drive their feet off the ground. There are ways still from bottom to strike and do some damage, but you they're not close to as easy. Also, just percentages. You know, everybody, human nature, has some idea of how to throw punches. But groundwork, mat work is very, not human nature. Like the part that's human nature is get on top, be heavy and punch the person in the head. That's human nature. And that works. That's the simplest way to do damage to somebody. But if somebody's on bottom on their back, it's very, counterintuitive, and it's not natural at all. So just by running the numbers, you know, 99.9% of people don't know how to fight when they're on their back. Again, this is a reason why wrestling is such a good fighting style, combat sport, martial art. Wrestling doesn't have the best answers for when you're on bottom, but the majority of people don't know how to wrestle. And if you're a good wrestler, the vast majority of people don't know what to do when they're on bottom or on their back. So as long as you're a better wrestler and you can get on top, just when nobody knows what to do when they're underneath you, then you'll be able to win the majority of your fights. So, I mean, wrestling is a good fighting style. Step two, pass the legs. You want to pass your opponent's legs. The legs are the main source of offense from bottom position. So if they actually know what they're doing, and they can triangle choke you, armbar you, you know, stuff like that. If they actually know what they're doing. So when you get past the legs, you don't have to worry about that threat anymore. But even if they don't know what they're doing, they could still throw strong up kicks from bottom. So there's plenty of examples of this in MMA, is people from bottom laying on their back and an open guard throwing an up kick and getting a knockout finish. So again, the legs are just really strong. So even if somebody's untrained, if you're standing over them and they kick up and they land their heel right in your chin, not a good strategy. But when you pass their legs, now their legs are out of the equation, so they can't submit you even if they are trained with their legs. They can't strike you whether they're trained or untrained. And now it's your entire body against their upper body. So they have they still have punching ability, still have some kneeing ability. It's just both are compromised when you're past their legs. You have a good pinning position. Of course, this blueprint is designed for street fighting, MMA, and jiu-jitsu. So it's not just designed for, sports jiu-jitsu or MMA. If you pass someone's legs and you're, say, topside control, yes, they can bite you. Yeah, they can eye gouge you. Yeah, they can look to low blow you. Yeah, they can still attempt all those things, but you as the person on top, you can also do the same thing. You can eye gouge, but the fact that you're on top, you can use all of your weight, you can use gravity, and you have the pinning position, and you can use your legs, you have an advantage. So in eye gouging battle, the person on top who can posture and get their head and eyes out of range is at an advantage from the person who on bottom cannot move their head because they're pinned to the floor. When they're driving up to try to eye gouge, they're fighting against gravity and their opponent's weight. So again, they just have the high ground on you. They just have the advantage. Striking from top pins, like side control mount, way more power from side control or mount if you're throwing punches or elbows as opposed to the person on bottom. Same thing with small joint manipulation, like fingers or whatever, nose, whatever, ears, exact same thing can be done. It's the same thing. Lots of times people say that, hey, from side control bottom, I'll just bite you or I'll eye gouge you. It's like the person in the top position can do the exact same thing. They just have their weight, gravity, and they have a better angle for what they want. And they have the ability to move whatever your target is. When you're on bottom, it's harder for you to move and defend the target because the floor is pinning you. But for just jiu-jitsu or MMA, with none of those penalties, for jiu-jitsu, once you pass the legs as well, then that's when we can start isolating limbs or you can start striking to the head. Step three, you're going to cycle through a series of pins that increase your offense and control. And at the same time, they reduce your opponent's offense, escapes, and defense. Okay, so you go through pins, side control, knee on belly, mount, rear mount. Those pins are interchangeable. All of them have pros and cons. Some are better than others. Some are better in some situations and worse in other situations. Each one has a specific control points. And like I said, just like a tool, it's good for what it's good for. But as you improve any of those positions, your ability to control your opponent goes up. Because you're closing off their options, your offensive options go up, and their escapes decline. Like when you first get a dominant position, it's one of the easiest times to escape. Also, your defense is going to be hard to submit you. But as they keep encroaching on you and taking you out of position, as they improve that pin, then your escapes are going to drop. Your ability for defense is going to drop as well, and their offense is going to go up. And also, you're having to carry their weight, so you are spending more energy than they are. They can, by default, just use their weight and lay in the position, and they spend very little. You on bottom, you have to at least keep their weight off of you, and even just that is still spending energy, whether it's fatiguing your arms or shoulders and make it tougher for you to block punches later on, tougher for you to defend a submission later on or defend strikes. Or it just takes you out of the game. It just takes you out of the game, the fight where you have no offense. You're just stuck, and that's just it. You can't win the fight if you can't apply offense. So if they have you in a position where you can't apply any offense and you are stuck there for the entire time, you will lose the fight. There's no way you can win. There's no way you can do damage. Number four, let's see. Yeah, I just put on this one. As you improve your fighting position, the probability of finishing your opponent by submission or strikes goes up. So that's just as your pin gets better, you'll be able to strike more. The more that you strike, the more damage adds up. The more likely are you going to do enough damage to either the referee will stop it, or they will go unconscious, or like again, if it's a street fight, they sometimes people don't even go unconscious, but it's like so much damage, you know, people do die by being beaten to death. So yeah, it can get really bad if you're in a position where you have no offensive option, no defensive option, no escape option. It's the reason why they have the submission as an option, the reason why the referee steps in and stops the fight once somebody can no longer defend themselves. Say step five. Number five, really bullet point. At any time you get pushed back a level or a position, you just restart the process. So jiu-jitsu is that, where it's you are increasing your pins, and say somebody escapes eye control, gets you back to guard. Well, what do I do now? It's right back. Like, it's like a recipe for baking a cake. You just restart on it again. If you mount somebody and you're working to get an arm triangle and you get 70-80% there, and then they slip and pummel their arm out of the arm triangle, you're still in mount. You don't have to like freak out and change your old strategy. You just go right back to underhook and start walking your hand with arm triangle again. Every single time that you work the strategy, and if you are in the dominant positions, because your opponent's spending more energy than you are, it just takes multiple attempts, but it's really just being patient. Most people are not patient enough. This is going to be something that helps out with finance and career as well. Just because you're working the plan the proper way, you're following the strategy, you're following the plan, doesn't mean that it's going to work the first time. Like an arm triangle is a great example. You have somebody mount and you get an underhook, you start walking your hand for an arm triangle. First time they muscle you down, because they are in a threatened position. So combination of adrenaline and because they're trying to protect themselves, they're going to be stronger than you. If you're equal strength, they're going to be able to like muster up or summon more energy, because they're fighting for survival. You're fighting for the finish, but survival is going to give them an extra charge of power. So your first time you walk it up, they fight like crazy and they defend the arm triangle. It's like, okay, what do? Do you change your old strategy? Like, no, you just restart again. You pummel underneath. This time you walk up and you're walking your hand up for your arm triangle, and this time they're more crafty and they actually pummel. They pummel inside, get an underhook, and now they pummel underneath again. What do? Do you change your strategy? No, your chest is still bearing down in their face. Your hips are still in their chest. It's hard for them to breathe. You're still smashing them. You just go again and start walking your arm triangle up again. This time, they don't pummel. They don't power you. This time, it's just really slippery and sweaty, and you slide off of their elbow. What do? You just restart again. You have spent very little energy and you're constantly looking for a finish, and you're getting close, or you're working towards the finish. Just something is getting your way and it's stifling your progress. And then, you know, after that elbow slip, now you walk up again. And the fourth time that you walk it up, your opponent is fatigued from the three attempts before. They've already used their power thing and they blew that out. They use their craftiness in the pummel, but now you're wise to it, so you get your underhook a little bit tighter so that they can't pummel. And you also make an adjustment and get a little bit closer to the shoulder, closer to the lat or armpit, high on the tricep. So now the slip factor's gone too. And then you slowly march through an arm triangle and you finish the match. So that's like an example, a practical example of if you're in a match. And this really sucks if you're on bottom, if you're in the inferior position and your opponent is just smart and patient. It really sucks, because if they don't give you a hole, an escape pattern, like if they don't make a mistake and they don't give you an opportunity to escape, like you can just be pinned and that's it. It's over. It's because they're being smart. That's the biggest thing. They're not, you know, if there's 3 minutes left in the round, there's no reason to like quickly jump up for an armbar. You're giving them a easy escape there. From the person who's on bottom, that it's really no fun. It really sucks, because they have the high ground. They never give you an opportunity to get it back. So now we'll go over the points. The points are not arbitrary. Like, you know, they're not just out there for no reason. People critique the points, but the critique of the points is really The problem is just humans. We just game stuff. We just want world titles. We just want things. So there's always going to be strategy. There's no perfect point system. There's no way to avoid stalling perfectly. It doesn't matter. Everybody's tried to do it. IBJJF, EBI, ADCC, everybody, every sport governing body, everybody tries to do it. And it's a constant adjustment. But the standard Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu points are not there just for no reason. Now people can game the system and they can, you know, do their thing. That's just what people do. It kind of sucks. But the point system itself is not bad. It's solid. There's some things that I would suggest, just a couple little modifications that I would suggest. But yeah, as it stands right now, a takedown is 2 points. So you're getting rewarded by taking somebody off their feet. Okay, or putting them down to the floor, and you get on top. A guard pass is 3 points, so you're getting past those dangerous legs again, so you're getting rewarded for that. You pass the dangerous legs, and that's going to put you in a pinning position. Passing the guard, you could go straight to knee on belly, you could go to side control, you could go mount or rear mount. There's different options depending on the type of pass you're using. Knee on belly is 2 points. So knee on belly is when you put your knee on your opponent's stomach and you're essentially riding on top of them, or you're like kind of like a sled, like your knee on top of your opponent's stomach. You get 2 points for that. You're getting 2 points for knee on belly. It's not as good a pin position. It doesn't give you as much control as rear mount or mount, but it still has hand-to-hand fighting combat applications. Like, good example for knee on belly is if you're in a public situation, or if you're in a situation where potentially there's other threats that you need to pay attention to, knee on belly is good because it allows you to apply pressure to your opponent and still pin them to some degree. It's not as strong, again, as I said, side control or mount or rear mount, but it allows you to strike better than knee on belly, side control, or you can at least throw punches because you're postured higher. But also you have more freedom and movement. So if you need to disengage, say your knee on belly on somebody, you have control of them because you have weight, your knees on their sternum, their chest, their stomach, their abdominals. So you have weight on them, so you have a pin. But if they were to pull a knife out, you would quickly want to disengage and create space at that time. Or you would want to control the knife and you would want to disarm the person. But because your knee on belly, you have the range that you have a better line of sight or visibility, so you could see that knife. And side control would be harder to see that knife. If somebody pulls it out, they could maybe just stab you. But knee on belly, you can see somebody pulls a knife out. You can choose whether you want to just go for a disarm and take the knife away, or you can just disengage in general. You also can see your surroundings better from knee on belly. So you can use a knee on belly as a pin and then look around you to see if the person has backup or a buddy that's coming to soccer kick you in the side of the head or in the back of the head punch you in the back of the head. So you can see around. Again, if you need to disengage, you can disengage. But you can also go from knee on belly to mount position. Or you can go to side control. So from knee on belly, you can disengage if you want, or you can re-engage. So it's given 2 points. For sport jiu-jitsu, knee on belly does open up other submission options as well. It gives your opponent more space, but when they have more space, it also gives you more space to pummel and look for offense or attacks. Mount is 4 points. So mount is 4 points. So side control is good. Side control is really good for elbows and knees. It can be difficult to punch from side control. Mount, it's easier to punch from mount position. Really good elbows from mount as well. You can do more damage with your punches and elbows from mount than you can from side control. Knees are good in side control. But also with the mount position, you can posture up. So if somebody was trying to eye gouge, you can posture up so you can get out of the range. Side control, you're a bit closer to them. Mounts also, it's an improvement in position. Some people actually prefer side control over mount. What you want to do is be able to cycle between all these dominant positions. And then rear mount is given 4 points. And rear mount is considered the most dominant of all combat sport positions. rear mount's going to be when you have both hooks in, or you're riding legs, both legs. And the reason why it's the most dominant position is, one, you're behind your opponent, so it's very difficult for them to attack you. It's hard for them to punch you, kick you, eye gouge you, grab your throat, because you're behind their body. You can attack their neck really easily, and that's, you know, one of the most vulnerable parts of a human is the neck, so you can attack your opponent's neck. But also, this is a thing that's not legal in jiu-jitsu, it's not legal in MMA, but you can also strike to the back of your opponent's head. It's illegal in MMA because it would do too much damage. But yeah, the rear mount is the reason why rear mount is considered the most dominant position is, if you're watching a fight in the UFC, lots of times somebody can get their back taken, they can get rear mounted and still survive the round based off of timing and, you know, hand fighting properly and stuff. The gloves make it more difficult to choke your opponent. And it's not, you know, the right hooks and left hooks and uppercuts from rear mount, they're not nothing, but lots of times on the ground, you're not going to see a finish from that. If you, if the guy's on top, rear mount, and he flattens his opponent out by driving his hips down, then you can get a finish in that way. But if they allowed elbows to the back of the head and spine, rear mount would be the king of all positions. Rear mount, it would basically be, the fight would be, people would hunt for rear mount a lot. The fight would be over very fast if you know, if you had 12 to 6 elbows to the back of the skull. Rear mount would be the king position, but it's just does too much damage. But again, self-defense situation. If somebody's trying to hurt you, you need to know that. You need to be prepared for it. It's one of the issues with wrestling, if you're thinking about freestyle, Greco folk style, is just the back exposure, the back of your skull exposure and your neck exposure. But those are just different systems for different things. So, and if you noticed on that, escapes give you 0 points. Escapes give you 0 points, and a defense to a technique gives you 0 points. Really, jiu-jitsu's viewpoint on escaping a position, like say if somebody has you mounted and you get back to guard, or if somebody has you mounted and you stand up to your feet, or like say guard or half guard and you get up to your feet, you get 0 points for that. Wrestling, if you stand up, you're on bottom and you get back to your standing, that's one point, so it's incentivized. And defense for a technique, like somebody tries to armbar you and you defend it, you escape it, you defend it, triangle, whatever. Both of those are given 0 points. Jiu-jitsu's thought on that as a system is it's just your responsibility, and that you know, you shouldn't be rewarded for your responsibility, because if you don't do that, then you just lose the fight. If you escaping inferior position isn't rewarded, because it's kind of like it's that you're not doing something offensive. You're doing something you just have to do so that you don't get finished or you don't lose. And defense of an armbar isn't rewarded either, because if you didn't defend the armbar, the fight would just be over. So you're not the one who's imposing the offense. You're not the one who's like taking the risk. You're just doing the bare minimum. The bare minimum, what has to be done just to stay in the match. General rule of thumb with this positional hierarchy and the point of this podcast is you want to follow the blueprint. Like everything has this: best practices, heuristic rules, rule of thumb. All of these are just high probability strategies. There are times where you will break the blueprint, but especially when you're learning, when you're still learning to do something, and really your first 2 years that you're doing something, you're still a beginner. Mastery, you're looking at 10 plus years. So it's not like you can never break the blueprint, but it should be the majority of your strategy. The fancy stuff or the other things that are a lower percentage should just be sprinkled in. Be like audible plays or every once in a while do it as a surprise attack. There are a few moves that break the rules, like the positional hierarchy rules, like the buggy choke and baseball bat choke can both be done from side control bottom. So you're attacking from an inferior position. Generally, you don't want to attack from an inferior position. But they can be done. There's always exceptions to the rule. There can be issues when it comes to striking, for if they're striking. So say MMA, well, obviously a baseball bat choke's not going to work because they're not wearing a gi. There's no gi involved for MMA. But when they're striking, for the buggy choke, potentially getting elbowed, and the slam threat, of course, just locking yourself into an inferior position. If you get stuck, if you get slammed on your head, that would go for street fight as well. If somebody picks you up and slams you on your head. One of the things about, like, you could say that with, it's also one of the things that you need, well, like a triangle choke, you need to worry about that. There's an easy fix for that, though, if you know how to not get slammed in a triangle choke. It's actually a really easy fix. But in an inferior position, if you lock yourself in, and you're stuck, getting slammed is not a good idea. Guards are considered neutral position. So say a closed guard, if somebody was to pick you up in closed guard, you're not trapped there. If somebody stands up to like power bomb you in closed guard, as they get to standing position, you just unlock your legs and stand up with them. Butterfly guard, if somebody tries to pick you up, you just go to your feet. So you're not locked in. You're not stuck in that position. So one of my issues with lockdown itself is half guard. It's still a guard, so it's not an inferior position, but you're locking yourself into lots of people use half guard to smash and smother people and fatigue them. Half guard's probably the easiest guard to pass. And when you play lockdown, you're locking yourself into a position that people like to go to, so they can smush the person on bottom. So you're locking yourself into a position to be smushed. It's one of my issues with the lockdown and the various trap guards, like rubber guard included. But they have a place. There's still sometimes use them. If you're trying to attack from inferior positions, just think you're using more energy than your opponent. You're trying to attack when your opponent has the high ground and they have leverage on you, and gravity. So, there are sometimes if you want to do that, you just wouldn't want to base your entire game off of this. Think of it, if you're in an inferior position, you could just think of, you're not at zero. You're at, say, if you're mounted, you're at -3. And from -3, you have to go to -2. That's like wedging your elbow inside. And you're not going to go from -3 to +3. Lots of people try to do that when they're in side control. They try to bridge, or they're mount, they try to bridge. That's basically what you're trying to do. You're trying to do a 6-point move, like, or adjustment. You're trying to go from -3 to positive. You're -$3,000 in debt, and now you're trying to go to +$3,000. So you're trying to have a $6,000 swing instead. Much more reasonable and doable to go to zero, like break even. So pay off your debts, your $3,000 debt, and then start building up your account or your positions until you got to that $3,000. Trying to go from -3, like in the hole, to +3, that's it's a fool's trap, fool's errand, and people fall for it all the time. I see it all the time. Yeah, I see it all the time, and it's the same. It's like the same cluster of behaviors and stuff. So that's the reason why I'm trying to do this podcast. But yeah, going from that -3 to like your -3,000 in the hole, and you're trying to go to a +3,000 in your bank account. And that's when people get taken advantage of by loan sharks or gambling or crypto investment or NFT investment. Because it's a get-rich-quick scheme or any of those things like that. They prey off of your hopes and your dreams, and also the prey off the thought that you found like some secret thing. This could also be like for people that are trying to pass the guard and they're trying to just jump past somebody's guard. There are some cartwheel guard passes that work every once in a while. They do, but again, you're trying to jump straight from the open guard to mount. It's going to be tough to do on somebody that's good. And when you get countered, you get swept, or you get leg locked because you just flung yourself in without actually having a plan, purpose, or strategy, or doing what you're doing. It's like, it's not a surprise. Yeah, so next bullet point on my notes. Yeah, it's like being in debt and trying to, it's like being in debt and then trying to take a, and then you take a high interest loan to pay off that debt. The high interest loan is that it costs a lot of energy. So trying to be offensive from an inferior position because they have gravity, they have leverage, they have the high ground, you have to spend more energy than them. So it's a high interest loan. It's just not good. It's like, yeah, taking a loan out to pay a debt off. Not a smart way to do it. Let's see the next one I got. You could put this analogy with a career path. Like if you were to choose a career path of gambling and buying lottery tickets, you know, as a strategy, as opposed to finding an industry and committing 20 years of your life to it. If you find a professional work industry that you're interested in and you commit 20 years of your life to it, high probability that you're going to be successful and you'll do well in that field. But nobody wants to hear, 20 years. But the funny thing is, like, what else are you going to do with your life? Like 20 years is really not that long. The more that you do something, the more enjoyable it is. If it's something that you actually like, if it's something that you don't like at all and you don't have interest in it, then that's a completely different thing. But find something that's interesting career-wise. You'll still have hobbies, you'll still have family, you'll still have everything else. You have to have other parts of your life as well. But if you commit 20 years to something, you will be pretty good at it. And the majority of people will just quit after 2 years, 6 months, 2 years, 5 years. So probability of you doing well in that career field is going to be pretty high. Going the gambling route, the NFT, the crypto, and I'm not saying I don't invest in any crypto or anything like that. My grandmother used to always get us as stocking stuffers, like little scratch off lottery tickets. It was fun to do. I have fun with it. I don't dislike it or anything. But a lot of it, like trying to think of that as a strategy to, acquire wealth or get whatever you want. That's, 99.9% of people are going to fail. There's always going to be the 0.1% that are successful, and they will, be loud about it, and that kind of sells the dream that it might happen, but it's just not a high probability. It's not a smart strategy. Like always, you're free to choose whatever you want to do, but I'm just trying to give information, education, and my suggestion to help you out if you want it, you're interested in it. That's it. That's the basic breakdown of positional hierarchy in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, basic blueprint of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Hope you enjoyed that episode. Hope you got something out of it. Over the weekend, we had Naga in Franklin. We did really well. Let's see, tournament highlights, champions. We had a good number of, youth competitors, kids, but I don't have the list of how they all did. I know our, teenagers and adults that competed, Xavier, won his division, won all of his matches. Cameron won his division, won all of his matches. Hale won all of her matches. She won her division, and then she was bumped to the advanced division. Halle's been training for a little bit over a year, but she has the benefit of her brother Xavier to train with, and also from the start, she started with started with the competition class and training with all the advanced people. She's one of the fastest people to be cleared for doing heel hooks. I think probably cleared her at like 6-7 months doing heel hooks, but again, her brother Xavier has helped out a lot with that, but also Hale is also a good student and pays attention and follows the advanced students in the gym and listens and pays attention. She did really well, but yeah, with just a little over a year of training, they bumped her up to the advanced division, and she won dominant fashion. So probably get her in the expert division next time, so she can win a championship belt. Make sure Cameron, Xavier, Halle, yeah, all three champions. Junaid won his division, so gold medal. And Alex won his weight class, champion of his weight class, won his, all of his matches, and then he won the absolute as well. All weight classes combined, or no weight limit, just everybody in together. He won his weight class and the absolute, and submitted all of his opponents. I think he had 5 matches and submitted all 5 opponents. And yeah, did good stuff. Junaid and Alex, Junaid and Alex both. What they do really well is follow the lesson plan, but also work with the advanced students on all of the most up to date techniques, and strategies, and win. They are both good athletes, but they win primarily with technique. So, like wrist trapping, mat returns, smart thing. When you look at it, if you were to come to our class, like, if you're a student, even if you don't compete, a cool thing about their performances is if you were to watch them compete, you would say, oh, I recognize that. I know exactly what that is. And like you could say, you know, just like if you understand football plays, you could go, oh, cool. Like I had to see exactly what they did step by step. So that's good stuff. I have nothing against being athletic, strong. I want you to be strong, explosive, fast, well-conditioned, all that stuff. I want you to be the superior athlete, but also super technical. So that's where it needs to be. So, yeah, we had a good weekend, and Halloween's tomorrow, so be cool. Halloween's tomorrow. We got class tomorrow, and yeah, we got a cool week coming up. Hope you enjoyed this podcast episode. We got November 12th and 13th, the Nashville Open. November 19th, we got AGF. December 10th, we have RPG. And we have Geo fighting kickboxing. He has kickboxing bout. December 10th, we have Austin is fighting for Aries. Yeah, so busy schedule. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Until next time, see you.